Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Clock Sports Radio 94 WIP. Joe Giglio with you. Tucker Bagley behind the glass. You guys with us. 215-592-9494. So in past years, we would do a hot stove check-in every night at 9 during the baseball offseason. This year, we did not do it as much. Because quite frankly, there wasn't really anything to talk about. I wish we could have, but it was a very slow baseball offseason. But the offseason's over, which means now we could do our Clearwater check-ins and talk about actual baseball and spring training and what's happening and position battles. So we start off tonight, our first one, our first Clearwater check-in of spring training. Bob Wankel of Crossing Broad joining us right now to talk some baseball. Bob, baseball is back. Pitchers and catchers, how you doing tonight?
Joe, what's up, man? How are you tonight?
I'm doing well. Excited to talk about, you know, actual baseball and what the Phillies might look like. Bob, I want to start with this before we get to what's going on, you know, what could be going on in the next couple weeks in spring training. Phillies made a move today before this all started by signing Tony Watson, left-handed relief pitcher in his mid-30s. Always been good, always been durable. He was, from the games I watched, you know, probably one of the more trusted and used relievers out in San Francisco last year. Bob, I like this lottery ticket as much, if not more, than Kinsler and Hector Rondon. I like the Watson move here.
Yeah, the thing that jumped out about this guy is that he's been around for 10 years, and he's never really had a bad season. He was particularly good last year with the Giants. I believe 7 years out of the 10 that he's been in the big leagues, he's had a sub-1.2 whip. So he limits base runners. He's good against lefties and righties. So he's not a left-handed only kind of guy. You got to feel pretty good about it, especially on the deal that they signed him to. We're talking about a contract that would pay roughly $1 million if he makes the team, if full incentive. So it's a savvy pickup. It's the type of move that the Phillies have not made with much success over the last couple of years. But the idea of this certainly makes a lot of sense.
Bob, the rotation here, they've got a lot of options now. They have depth, and this was a key thing Dave Dombrowski wanted to fix and wanted to make sure as they go from 60 games to 162, they were covered here. But I keep wondering as I see all these names, and we'll see how they all pitch in spring training, but the idea of a six-man rotation when this season starts, and maybe more than just the beginning here, one, do you think it could happen, and two, do you think it's a good idea for the Phillies to trot out a six-man rotation?
Aaron Nola talked a little bit about this today, and he's not thrilled with the idea. He said, you know, he would prefer to go every fifth day, get as many innings, get as many starts as possible. But I think it's something that smart teams have to at least think about at this point. You know, normally I would be reluctant to say this, but I think there's a real concern from teams across Major League Baseball about the transition from going to 60 games or from 60 games to 162 games. And, you know, are pitchers going to be able to get stretched out? Are there going to be injury concerns? And I think that's part of the reason that the Phillies have constructed their roster the way that they have, especially here late in the offseason, picking up guys like Chase Anderson, Matt Moore, trying to give themselves some options here in case they want to go to a six-man rotation. And, you know, frankly, even if they don't, they're probably going to have to go 7 or 8 guys deep over the first couple of months just because of injuries and just because of normal and natural attrition. So I think the Phillies have done a nice job in giving themselves some viable number 4, number 5 type starters to mix in. And frankly, the one thing that really jumped out at me today, and if the Phillies elect to go with a 5-man rotation, and I know that this is going to kind of confuse some people, but I don't believe that Joe Girardi gave an overwhelming endorsement to Spencer Howard making this rotation and being a part of it when they come north next month. I think that there's a couple different concerns with him. I know that physically he wasn't quite right last year. Keep in mind, he's never pitched in AAA before. And I just think that this is a team that knows it plays in a really difficult division that doesn't have games to give away. And I think that Spencer Howard's going to have to compete and earn and outpitch both Matt Moore and Chase Anderson to be a part of a 5-man rotation out of the jump. That doesn't mean that they've soured on him entirely or that he doesn't figure into their plans. But I just got the sense listening to Joe Girardi today, and again, this is completely my take. I don't think that he's a shoo-in for that number four spot or that number five spot.
Bob, let me ask you this then, because I agree with you on that, and I heard it the same way. I don't think he is a lock to be in this rotation, even if he pitches pretty good or well in spring training. So, Bob, a couple of things we know about Spencer Howard. One, he's a power pitcher, and he's got good velocity. Two, the deeper he went into games last year, the worse he got. And the third thing we know about him is that whatever the innings limit is, he's not going to be able to just have a full season as a starter because it's been very choppy for him last year, you know, with the short season didn't help his innings progression. Bob, do you think there's a chance here if they get good innings and decent innings out of Moore and Anderson and they have a 5 or 6 man rotation that's working, that they look at him and say, he's too good not to use Spencer Howard relief pitcher to help the bullpen? Could you see that?
I guess so. I think in an ideal world, they value him, and I think they project him as a meaningful part of this rotation moving forward. So I think it's a delicate balance between what's best for the immediate future and what will help this team versus what's best for Spencer Howard's overall development. And, you know, one of the things that we saw last year was that whether it be because there was the stop and start at the beginning, coming out of spring training and then the shutdown, or, you know, he had a couple different nagging injuries, Spencer Howard was just never quite physically right last year. The fastball velocity wasn't there. He wasn't able to overpower hitters the way he did in the minor league level. And so I think part of that was physical, and I think part of it was just a lack of experience, not pitching in AAA and kind of getting thrust into a difficult situation in the middle of a completely bizarre and, I hate the word, but I'll say it, an unprecedented season. You know, and I think that was definitely part of it. So I really do think if the Phillies could kind of pick and choose how this thing plays out, he would stay down and make starts on a regular basis and develop as a starting pitcher. But again, as we've seen in recent seasons, the way that things are mapped out and the ideal scenario rarely plays out that way. So I would suppose it would be a possibility.
Bob Wankel of Crossing Broad joining us here to talk some Philly spring training. Pitchers and catchers reported today, and Joe Girardi spoke, Aaron Nola spoke, and really the I would call it the elephant in the room or the biggest story right now, and it's one the Phillies are creating themselves, is bringing back Bob Odubel Herrera. Now, he's part of a kind of a secondary camp. He's there. He's not on the 40-man roster. But obviously, his inclusion here and the way Joe Girardi spoke today, you know, being afforded a chance to have a second chance and, you know, gain the respect back of the people there, they're giving him an opportunity. What do you make of this? And let me give you my theory on it, and here's why I'm frustrated. I'm not upset at the Phillies for giving him a second chance. I wouldn't if I was them. I would just move on. But I accept that they are, and I'm understanding of it. But what gets me is, what has changed over the last year, Bob? Like, last year, they didn't believe he had atoned enough, but another year, he has. My frustration is, it seems like they think their center field situation is dire now, and that is kind of pushing the second chance. What do you make of all this?
Certainly, if the Phillies had a better option in center field, that might make this situation a little bit more black and white. You know, I guess I look at this and I have mixed feelings on it. You know, by nature, I'm a second chance guy. I guess I would start by saying, if you don't believe that he deserves a second chance and you're done with him and you think it's repulsive that the Phillies are even entertaining this, I totally understand that, you know, like, and I wouldn't convince anybody otherwise. If you're somebody that believes that he does deserve a second chance, and that's just your general belief, I totally understand that as well. And I'm not trying to be politically correct in saying that, appease everybody by saying that, but it is a delicate situation. Like you said, it's the elephant in the room. My sense is that, you know, Joe Girardi talked about how the collective bargaining agreement sort of allows for Odubel Herrera and players that are in a similar position to him to kind of have an opportunity to redeem himself, right? And I kind of thought that in particular was interesting. I think that there's almost this idea that the mechanics of the way that the contract and the way that the CBA has been negotiated, it just, this is what it is, and we are going to give him this opportunity in part because we sort of have to. At the end of the day, I have two prevailing thoughts. I don't believe that the Phillies are going to showcase Odubel Herrera. Like, I've heard this idea that, well, they'll get him out there and maybe he has a really good spring and they can trade him for something meaningful. That's not going to happen, right? Like, we're talking about a guy who hasn't played in almost 2 years, who had a sub-300 on-base percentage in 2019. He's not going to trick anybody to giving up something that matters in 15 to 30 spring training at best. But what the Phillies could possibly do is say, hey, look, you've reestablished yourself. you've played fairly well. We're going to send you somewhere else and give you an opportunity. Maybe there's a team that's willing to take a chance on him. They're not going to give up much, but maybe that he just goes somewhere else, different change of scenery, and gets a look there. That's one possibility. The other possibility, I think the Phillies privately would probably say, listen, if he comes out here and lights it up, because our other options are so underwhelming, maybe we can carve a path if we all say the right things and we all, you know, show that we're unified on this front. And Aaron Nola and Joe Girardi certainly were today on the same page. If he plays really well, maybe we can kind of slip him onto the roster and see how things go, and we'll see how people react. And if he comes out and he plays like he did in 2016 and 2017, yeah, the initial reaction is going to be terrible. But like we've seen with Mike Vick, like we saw with Brett Myers, you know, going back more than 10 years ago, people in this city tend to, I guess, I don't want to say forgive or overlook things, but you know, those were guys that functioned in this city beyond some pretty rough personal incidents, you know, and that's the way I look at it, though I just don't believe at the end of the day he's good enough to make the roster. So I don't think come next month that we're going to be talking about Odubel Herrera anymore.
Yeah, I think in any one of these scenarios, it has to be worth the headache for the team, and I just don't think the player anymore is worth that, and it will be. It'll be a PR headache for them if they bring him north. All right, last one for you, Bob. Non-Phillies, but just baseball, because we just came across maybe a half hour ago. We noticed it. Your reaction, Fernando Tatis Jr., one of the great young players in the game, 14 years, $340 million the Padres just gave him. What do you think?
Quite a commitment. You know what my first reaction to that was? Ronald Acuna cannot be too happy right now. 8 years, $100 million. That's the steal of the century with Atlanta. So it's a good deal. I mean, you know, if you believe in the player, and certainly there's a lot of reason to believe in the player, he's going to be the face of baseball, I believe, for the next 5 to 10 years. And so for a team like the Padres that tends to fly a little bit under the radar, this is definitely a statement signing. This is a signing that kind of shows that, you know, we've kind of taken a back seat in recent years, but we're here now. We intend to compete, and we intend to be here for quite some time. So that is a statement signing by the Padres, that's for sure.
Yeah, it is. Gigantic and crazy years of money. Bob, always appreciate hopping on. We'll be reading, and it's fun. Baseball's back. Spring training's here, so we'll talk again soon. Thank you.
All right, Joe. We'll talk to you soon.
There he goes. Bob Wankel of Crossing Broad there talking to baseball. Yes, pitchers and catchers. It is an amazing phrase to say, and baseball is back, and the Phillies have started down in Clearwater. 215-592-9494. We'll come back. We'll get back into the Carson Wentz conversation and whether or not you blame the Eagles or Wentz more for this mess. But you know what we have to when we get back? My first roster projection. Roster projection, opening day guests, 1.0. Who will be the 26 players the Phillies bring north for opening day? I'll guess those coming up on Sports Radio 94 WIP. 917 Sports Radio 94 WIP. Joe Giglio with you. Tucker Bagley behind the glass. You guys with us. 215-592-9494. Let's check out our poll tonight at WIP Evenings here on who you're blaming more for the Eagles-Carson Wentz trade mess. And it's a mess right now because they still have this guy. He hasn't been traded yet. There's no deal, and it seems like more and more comes out that everyone in the NFL realizes, like, man, he really wants to go to Indianapolis. The Colts realize this. They're not going to up their offer. And the Bears may not want to bring him on if he doesn't want to be there. It is a problem. And last night we talked to Mike Kay of NJ.com, who threw out the idea, because we've been talking about this more in the context of, would Carson Wentz refuse to go to Chicago? And Mike's point was not that he refused, but what if the Bears need him to rework his deal, and his agent tells the Bears, hey, we're not reworking our deal to come to Chicago. You want him. You know, we can't not report, we'll come, but we're not reworking our deal. That could take them right out of this thing, leaving only the Colts and leaving the Eagles in a bad, bad place in this whole thing. And I blame the Eagles more than I blame Carson Wentz for where we're at right now, because it is a mess. Who's more to blame for this Eagles-Carson Wentz trade mess? 69% of our voters tonight say the Philadelphia Eagles. When was the last time I was on the side of the people that much? That doesn't happen often.
No, I mean positive Joe. It's probably finding new fans.
Well, I mean, someone's got to be blamed here, right? I'm not absolving the parties of blame. I just feel like the Eagles messed this more up than Wentz. They allowed him to run.
I just don't know what you could blame Carson Wentz for.
His play,
right? Like, I just, like, you blame him for signing a contract?
No. I blame the Eagles for giving him the contract. I mean, the thing I'm annoyed by is his attitude throughout this whole thing. But again, they set it up to where, like, you go back to the beginning of this. I don't know what point they should have put their foot down. But at some point, they had to realize, like, the locker room stuff was not going the way they probably hoped it would. The leadership stuff wasn't going the way. And then, like, I remember back to that Santa Liquido article. And that line always stood out to me, that he didn't want to run the Foles stuff. Like, if I'm Doug Peterson or I'm Mike Groh or I'm, you know, the coaches there, at some point, don't you have to say, like, hey, man, this is the offense. You're running the offense. Like, the fact that they let that happen, I don't know if we've ever recovered from that. Because it feels like that's when he started to become like, listen, we're going to do this thing my way or else. And I'm not surprised that we're here now when it comes to a trade discussion. And he's saying, we're going to do it my way or else. It is a bad spot the Eagles are in. 215-592-9494. All right. So I'm not sure how many times we did this last year. Unfortunately, I mean, I don't know if you want to blame us or not, but we did this like two or three times, and then they just shut down spring training.
They had a very long offseason.
Yeah, like we did this roster projection where I tried to guess the 26 players that would be on the Major League team, and then that just never happened because, of course, we know that the shutdown happened last March, and then they didn't come back until summer camp in July. But here's my first stab at this. So I'm going to try to guess the 26 players that will make the Phillies, that will be on the Major League team on opening day, I believe April 1st, against the Atlanta Braves, 3 o'clock, Citizens Bank Park. Here's my guess, first stab at it, 26-man roster for opening day. We have two catchers on the roster. Their names are JT Realmuto and my guy, Andrew Knapp. I have six infielders on the opening day roster. Actually, excuse me, seven infielders on the opening day roster, but with the idea that two of these guys have some versatility and go to the outfield. My seven infielders are Rhys Hoskins, Gene Segura, Didi Gregorius, Alec Bohm, that's your starting infield. And then my reserves, Scott Kingery, but he's going to play a role in the outfield. Brad Miller, Bamboo Brad, who came back here and officially signed today. And then CJ Chatham, that is my wild card to make this team. He is a trade the Phillies made with the Red Sox this past offseason, and it's a Dombrowski guy. Dombrowski had him in Boston. He never got a real chance there when Dombrowski left. And I think if they're going to use Kingery and use Miller as outfielders, and I think they really could. I mean, you could see Kingery in center, and I could see Brad Miller playing left field when McCutchen can't. If they're going to do that, they need another reserve infielder, and I think CJ Chatham could be the guy. Outfielders, pure outfielders, four of them. Harper, McCutchen, Quinn Haseley. But again, you're going to have Kingery and Brad Miller play outfield at times, so you kind of have more than just what it says right there. So your position players, Realmuto, Knapp, Hoskins, Segura, Didi, Bohm, Kingery, Miller, Chatham, Harper, McCutchen, Quinn, Haseley. Those are my guesses for the position players on the opening day roster. Now for the pitchers. And we were just discussing it with Bob Wankel. I believe a six-man rotation is very possible to start the 2021 season. So my six starters, Aaron Nola, Zach Wheeler, Zach Eflin, Vince Velasquez, Matt Moore, and Chase Anderson, the two veteran signings they made late in the winter. So those are my six starters. I think all those guys make the rotation. The bullpen, and you're going to hear, I think there's going to be two or three names in here you're going to be surprised that are not. My bullpen to open the year: Archie Bradley, Hector Neris, Connor Brogdon, JoJo Romero, Tony Watson, who was just signed today, the veteran lefty that pitched for the Giants last year. Jose Alvarado, the trade left, the big arm lefty from the Rays. Sam Coonrod, the guy they traded for with the big velocity, but has no idea where it's going, from the Giants. So Bradley, Neris, Brogdon, Romero, Watson, Alvarado, Coonrod. That's my guess at the opening day bullpen, which means Brandon Kintzler, who they signed a couple days ago, and everyone was all excited. I don't think he's going to make it. Hector Rondon, who they signed about a month ago, same kind of thing, minor league deal. You get more money if you make the team. I don't think he's going to make it. And the big name that's not here is Spencer Howard. My guess is Spencer Howard is going to open the year in AAA. Joe Girardi was not, as Bob Wankel told us earlier, effusive in his praise of him today. If he's not going to be in the rotation to start the year, I mean, they probably can manage his innings better and kind of keep him up and to speed and ready to go in AAA. Way better than they would be in the bullpen. So I think he could not be on the team to start the year. So my pitching is Nola, Wheeler, Eflin, Velasquez, Moore, Anderson, Bradley, Neris, Brogdon, Romero, Watson, Alvarado, Coonrod. Are you printing your playoff tickets, Mr. Bagley?
I don't know if I'm going that far yet.
Are they going to go over 500? I feel like this is the year.
I feel like they have to, right? And last year, they were, what, two games under 500? They were 29-31 or 28-32.
They may have finished 28-32 because I think 29-31 made the playoffs, and that was Milwaukee.
Well, that's sad. But
it is. Well, the whole thing was sad.
I mean, when you look at last year, like, as much as we can talk about the back end of the rotation being a real rough patch and, you know, center field is pretty much a black hole. Yeah. I mean, we went over it last night. Scott Kingery and Roman Quinn, their OPS plus was somewhere between 40 and 60 combined. But it's the bullpen, right? I mean, I think they had five pitchers last year pitch for them, and their ERAs at the end of the season were over 10.
It's unbelievable.
It was unbelievable. I mean, just by them showing up and becoming the 20th best bullpen in Major League Baseball, I mean, that has to be worth something. That has to be worth another five or six wins. Easy, right? I mean, that's my big thing is you had one glaring weakness on that team last year, and it doesn't even need to be a strength. If it just isn't the worst bullpen in the history of baseball, you have a shot.
Well, and here's the thing. As I look at the – so here are some of the names they've acquired, right? So they've acquired Archie Bradley. They acquired Tony Watson. I mentioned earlier I really like that move today. Jose Alvarado, Sam Coonrod, Brandon Kinstler, Hector Rondon. They've added a lot. And I think Connor Brogdon, as we saw when he came back last year, he's got some real stuff. Jojo Romero has some real stuff. I didn't even mention David Hale, who they traded for last year from the Yankees. Here's the point I'm trying to make. Is this bullpen going to end up as a top five bullpen in baseball? Does this strike fear in opponents? I don't think it does. But I kept saying this last year, and I was met with resistance on this. I thought the bullpen that the Phillies had post-trades last year, not opening day. I'm not talking about opening day when – who are those guys? I'm trying to remember their names. Who are the names of the pitchers they had in opening day? I remember before the game started, before we handed it over to Scott in L.A., like we were like, who are these guys? Not those guys. But when they reworked the bullpen in August. They added David Hale, Workman, Hembree, like David Phelps. They turned over half the bullpen. Brogdon came up. I kept saying, like, they shouldn't be this bad. I didn't think last year Joe Girardi did a very good job with the bullpen. And I'm talking about post the trades and the moves they made. I didn't think he did a very good job with it. As I look at this group and the names they have to choose from, Bradley, Neris, Brogdon, Romero, Watson, Alvarado, Coonrod, Kinstler, Rondon, there's enough here that Joe Girardi should have not a terrible bullpen. This should be way closer to league average this year. I'm not even asking for a top 10 bullpen, but this should be closer to average. Tucker mentioned the 20th best bullpen. I believe there's enough here. I believe Dave Dombrowski has given Joe Girardi enough to have the 20th best bullpen. And if it's worse than that, then I will question Joe Girardi's tactics and how he used these guys. Because there's some ability here. Like, this isn't just like guys that just get lit up every time they go out there. Now, they're not all perfect. There's a reason Sam Coonrod was traded. There's a reason Jose Alvarado was given up on by the Rays. They are flawed. But there's, like, these guys aren't going to go out there throwing 87 and just get smacked around the yard. Like, these guys can pitch. They have stuff. They've been successful in the big leagues. If they are not close to league average, Tucker put it at 20th. If they're not 20th or better, there's a problem. I think Girardi didn't use them right. Like, they look to me on paper like a bullpen that is 20th, 19th. Like, they should be in that range. If they're 27th, Tucker, or 28th, something went wrong again.
Especially, I mean, bullpen, I think we can agree, is such a fickle thing.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, the reason why Mariano Rivera and Trevor Hoffman are held in such high regard is they're one of maybe a handful of pitchers who are dominant year in and year out for the entirety of their career.
Never blips, never bad
years. I mean, even think about, like, Brad Lidge, right? Brad Lidge, probably the most beloved closer since Tug McGraw. He had one good year here.
Right.
And the year before, he was atrocious with Houston, and they got him for Jeff Geary and Michael Bourne. And the year after, he was arguably the worst closer in the history of baseball. Like, it happens. I mean, Gene Mar Gomez was the Phillies closer for 5 months one season.
Remember that?
And he was out of baseball by March of the next year.
Yeah, what's his name? Our old buddy Pete Mechanic kept running him out there in the ninth inning.
He was good. Like, the first 2 months, he kept getting people out somehow.
I mean, he's throwing 85, but he kept getting them out, and then, you know, it stopped working. But I do believe there's enough to work with here that this bullpen should not be horrendous. 215-592-9494. It is fun talking baseball again as spring training starts down in Clearwater. Chris is in Phoenixville. What's up, Chris?
Well, I'm on my third item here. I got an iWatch. All my other phones, I'm almost home. I don't have my lightning cord, so I'm on my iWatch, so hopefully you can hear me.
No, it sounds fine. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, 16 years of spring training between playing professionally, watching my brother play with the Phillies for 3 years back in 90 to 93, and then some college spring training. So I've seen some stuff, and Pope promised me I'd make it pro, and I did, but not with the Phillies. So I was drafted by the Detroit Tigers, then went to the alumni of Tucker Bagley School, a Phoenixville Phantom, and my brother was cut by the same high school coach whose name's on the field, Doc Kennedy. So it's pretty funny that he played 3 years of pro ball, never played high school ball, and the safest guy in the stadium was the catcher until the one day he threw a strike, he broke the catcher's hand. So I've been to a couple spring trainings that get pumped up for my primary sport of baseball, and I always laugh when people in Philadelphia, you know, are always, they want it hot and they want it now, but they don't look at reality. Vinny Velo is what he is. You know, kids are measured by potential. Adults are measured by results. And last time I checked, he's a grown-ass man, so he should basically move on. A six-man rotation doesn't work early in the season because most teams have off days. So early in the season, anything you'll do is probably have a long starter. So you go four innings, and then you bring another person in, and it'll do another 3 to 4 innings. But you don't do six. Man rotation early in the season. You might do it later in the season when arms are burned.
It's
but
interesting.
Early in the season,
before
you
go on,
4-4.
Yeah, you're right. Well, you're right. That's usually the way it goes. It's interesting, though, because a bunch of teams are talking about doing this, and the one thing I don't know, and I don't think anyone knows, because it's obviously unprecedented, is how what the effect is of going from 60 games to 162. Like, you know, usually there's that the whatever you call it, the 30% limit, or, you know, you never want to pitch so many more innings 1 year and then go
these
up the
guys
next year.
Are a bunch of, I'm old school, so I threw 30-plus years. I'm 47. I threw over 30-plus years from Little League on up to pro ball. So long tossing, arm strengthening is what does it. Doing Job's exercises is what does it. What kills kids today are these travel ball / showcase / academies. We didn't even have an academy at my age. We used to go to the 15-foot racquetball court at Phoenixville YMCA, and that's where we did our one knee drills. And, you know, finally when us northern folks went down south, you know, we were behind the eight ball, but we were like farm strong, and we could throw a lot harder than these kids today that have juiced up guns, if anything. Like a kid throwing 97 today is the equivalent of 87 when I throw in a radar gun. And Nolan Ryan would probably throw a buck 15 today, whereas little Johnny that's going to have his second Tommy John surgery at age 12 is never going to get a scholarship because everybody has the medicals on everybody. So my point is Vinny Velo needs to be a closer or out of the organization because that's the kind of mindset he has. He's too volatile mentally. He has the assets physically, but 10-cent brain, $1 million arm.
Yeah, well, he's had that for a long time, Chris. And it's amazing he's still here. It's amazing he's still here.
He doesn't shoot three-pointers, and he doesn't step up in the pocket like Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz is going to be on the Hallmark Channel as a backup to Prince. Prince William, who stepped down. He's in California now.
Yes,
because he looks more like a backup actor to the Prince than he does to any quarterback because he has no pocket presence. The only time he does good is when he rolls out or steps up, but he doesn't have a pocket because his offensive line sucks because Howie Roseman doesn't know how to evaluate. And so the Phillies, they're better now because Duquette will do better than the left-handed shortstop from Dartmouth. Or maybe he was right-handed, but he stuck.
Mac Ledzak from Dartmouth. Chris, I appreciate the call. Call again anytime. Chris threw a lot of takes in there. Vinny Velo, Carson Wentz, been a backup on the Hallmark Channel there. It is the Velasquez thing is interesting because Matt Gelb today wrote that he thinks there's a chance they trade him before the end of spring training, which I could see that happening. Like, if they don't go with a six-man rotation, Vince Velasquez is either in the bullpen or has no spot here. Like he has no role here, and he does make about $4 million, I think. And I didn't think this was going to happen, but they are brushing up against the luxury tax again. I mean, they are. Like when you factor in some of these signings they've made. If one or two of these guys makes the team, I think Tony Watson gets $3 million if he makes the team. Kinsler gets $3 million if he makes the team. If these guys are about to make the team and they're going to pick the best players, because remember last year they didn't. That bothered me, where they were cutting guys like because they didn't want to guarantee them their big league contract. If they're committed to bringing the best team forward, these guys are going to be, you know, for free. You're going to have to pay them $3 or $4 million to come here and play. I could see them trading Vince Velasquez before the season and just kind of dumping him and dumping some money. It's just a matter of, I don't think they get much back, but I could see a team taking on Vince Velasquez. Like, he's still young enough where another team hasn't watched him like we have. They'd say, all right, we'll give him a chance.
When are we going to admit he's a better left fielder than pitcher?
Oh, I admitted that a while ago. He was a great left fielder. He's right now.
He's a good hitter.
Right now, if you had to win one game, Tucker, or it was the ninth inning of a game, right? You're up a run. Would you rather anyone else on this team in left field than Vince Velasquez? Because I wouldn't. Right? I'd rather Mather than McCutcheon right now. He can't move.
Yeah, and Jay Bruce is gone, and Kingery can't. I mean, maybe Brad Miller, but Brad Miller isn't a gold glover.
He's basically an infielder who just stands out there because he can hit. Yeah, if ninth inning, game 162 this year, Phillies are up one, McCutcheon comes to the bench, we're putting a defensive replacement in. His name is Vince Velasquez.
I mean, he had 3 RBIs last year.
How? Last year? Or
the 2019.
I was going to say, did I miss something?
No.
There's a DH last year.
Imagine him pinch hitting.
Well, we get the DH, no DH this year, so he can get some RBI. 215-592-9494. That is how you hop in. Phillies are starting down in Clearwater. And, of course, Carson Wentz and the Eagles trade saga continues. We'll discuss coming up on Sports Radio 94 WIP.